The following is a Cass Wave Studios production.
I'm Sean Holmes, your captain.
And your first officer, Brian Massey.
We are ongoing mission is to explore every Star Trek episode ever.
Fascinating, Captain.
This is the Prime Directive. Hello. Metal. Welcome to the Prime Directive. I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Brian Massey.
And this is a pilot, our pilot episode. So, we're going to discuss a few things. So we're just basically going to geek out about Star Trek in this, and basically this podcast is going to be us just discussing
mm-hmm. Star Trek. Pretty much, we're on a five-year mission to dork like no dork has ever dorked before.
Precisely.
The idea behind this show is that we are going to review every single episode of Star Trek, and that includes the original series,
which we will touch on later. We will touch on the episode of the first episode, the pilot episode, because this is our pilot episode. We'll review the pilot episode of Star Trek.
It just seems natural. Why not?
The Cage, starring Captain Pike,
mm-hmm.
and not William Shatner.
Let me put it this way. In the intro that you just heard is pretty much the only appearance that we're going to have from Mr. Bill Shatner this podcast. He will show up later, though, so. But, he's just waiting in the wings right now. You know, yeah. You'll have your time.
He'll have his time. And starting off, I kind of want to go over, because we'll usually start out the show with, like, just kind of geeking about whatever Star Trek stuff we have on our minds currently. Mm. And I want to start off by mentioning how the uniforms, basically the first thing you would put on to become a Star Trek officer, whatever your rank is.
If you were in Starfleet, yes.
Yeah, you're Starfleet.
Your Starfleet standard issue uniform.
Right, you would put on a uniform. Mm-hmm. And let's discuss like our favorite uniforms.
Yeah, and one of the more interesting conventions about Star Trek uniforms, at least from like Next Gen, from TOS to Next Gen, was that gold was command, blue was science, and red was it was engineering and it was security. And then they switched it from gold to red for command, and then blue was still science, but it was also medical, and then gold was engineering, which was interesting.
Hmm.
But that was actually a change that they didn't make until like later on, I think in season 2 of Next Gen. Yeah. And I think they just kind of kept those conventions as they went on. So, but I don't know, let's start from like least favorite.
I'm gonna have to say I hate to pull from our first episode, but those have to be my least favorite uniforms.
Really?
Of all time. I mean, it's like the darn thing in the pilot, it's just a sweater.
It's a sweater with like a rollover collar.
With like a ring around it. No, that was the jacket. That was the outside jacket that they put on when they're on the planet.
I'm talking about
the one they're wearing inside. It's just a sweater. I'm like, it's lazy.
Yeah.
It's lazy.
And like, it's funny because the Starfleet insignias literally look like they took a piece of like felt from like a Christmas ornament. Like a felt Christmas ornament, and cut it out, and then took a marker to it, and was just like,
You could see the handcrafted work being displayed.
I mean, they tried. God bless them, they tried. But, you know, this was at a time when they still didn't really flesh out the look of the show necessarily. The bridge is there. Everything's there. It's just not, you know, at its apex yet. For me, my least favorite costume, it's got to be, it's either a tie between the Insurrection uniforms.
Yeah.
Which were god awful. Like, they were just wool on top of wool. Or there was an episode in there was an episode on Enterprise where they went way into the future, and I believe it was the Enterprise J or something.
Yeah.
Where, like, it was like thousands of years in the future, and like they had gotten into like the later parts of the alphabet for the name conventions of the Enterprise. And it was this flat looking, like almost like a blade looking starship.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, it looked like they were wearing like fetish black, you know, latex uniforms or something. They were god awful. They were just awful. It literally looked like, I don't know. It almost looked like Venom's suit from Spider-Man 3.
Where was this?
In Enterprise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Enterprise.
Captain Pike went like way far into the future on the Enterprise J. And these guys are wearing these like, it literally looks like the symbiote from Spider-Man 3. It's bad. It's so bad. But, yeah, and we'll try and put links in the description below when you're watching this episode. But, funny enough, if we move on to my next... moving on, I believe my next favorite uniform, because I honestly don't hate any other uniforms, but probably I would have to rank them then going on to the NX crew, the Enterprise crew, because they actually look more like... These uniforms kind of look more like, you know...
Like they gave a shit.
Like they look more like Stargate uniforms, or they look more like Battlestar Galactica uniforms, even.
Right.
Like they don't look like a tunic with black pants. They look more like an actual astronaut suit, which is actually kind of nice because like they have like mission patches and you know stuff like that. And hell, they even wear like baseball caps. When's the last time that you saw a baseball cap in a Star Trek episode?
Yeah.
Well, like it was more like the Navy then, because it was like
it was more of like traditional like militant uniform into.
It was more like the Navy in space than anything, which was actually kind of nice. It was a refreshing take on it. What about you?
I mean, I'm classic. I like sort of classic. I like the uniforms from the Next Generation. I mean, they're simple. They're not overly complicated, and you have some sense of they know what they're doing.
Yes.
Like, and it's a unique uniform.
Which is funny because...
And it allows you, it's like pastel colors, so it, like, it's got black with, like, a pastel color, a horizontal stripe. So you kind of get a feel like, okay, well, like, the most important thing about them is not the uniform, it's actually the personality behind it.
Yes.
And, you know, it allows the personality to pop out.
What's interesting about those uniforms, though, is because the uniforms that you're more familiar with like, the higher collar and the pip ranking and whatnot,
right.
They didn't go with that initially. They actually had, like, a more lower collar setting, and then they had that stripe across it.
Yeah,
and
I see that.
What was also, like, god-awful about those uniforms, like, first season uniforms, was that they had men wearing dresses, because apparently in the future they were like, well, these conventions aren't going to be a thing, and it's like, okay, fine, but it's literally this guy is wearing a dress, and there's nothing about this. Look, it's one thing if, you know, someone is born biologically male and they identify as female, that's one thing. This was literally a man, like, you know, you could just see it was like any kind of, you know, he showed male characteristics. This was a guy, but he's wearing a dress that goes up to his, like, thighs, like, above his knees. And I'm like, no, stop it. That's nonsense.
So, are you a fan of the uniform from Generations? The standard uniform where they have, like, the overlapping thing.
Yes.
And, like, they have a star thing on their on their left shoulder.
That's probably one of my favorite uniforms from Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then I like what they did, too, with, like, the Deep Space Nine and the Voyager uniforms. I like those, too. But overall, if I had to go with my favorite overall uniform, it would probably have to be TOS. It's kind of hard to beat TOS.
TOS is really nice. I mean, it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah. So yeah. Enough about you know, all this and.
Okay, allow me to propose a topic.
Okay.
How did you get into Star Trek?
Oh yeah, this is a first the color. Cool thing to talk about. You notice I have the ship drone noise in the background.
I like it.
Yeah, it's from Next Generation, even though we're not there yet. It's so comforting.
It sounds good, man.
It sounds good and makes me want to talk about Star Trek. I first got into Star Trek, basically, I think I must have been like 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
and my dad put on, he put on the Next Generation, and we were watching episodes of it, because during this time it actually aired.
Mm-hmm. It was still in syndication.
Yeah, so it was still like, in syndication.
If I remember correctly, like when I was growing up, like it was always on like the WB or it was on UPN.
Yeah. And
or something like that.
Yeah, and I was just...
Remember UPN, by the way? Holy crap.
And, like, I remember being just lost in like, just watching, like, well, these guys are cool. They go places, they do things, like, and then they have, like, this awesome technology that, like, I didn't even have, that no one had.
Yeah. Was that, like, the rabbit hole then? Was that, like, where you, like, went down and...
That's where I went down the rabbit hole. What more got me into that since, you know, when, growing up, my dad worked for the, for like a cinema service industry that would, you know, fix projectors in movie houses. And I would go with him. I would go with him to movie houses, and then I'd basically watch movies for free. When a Star Trek movie was there, I lost my shit. Like, as soon as I saw Generations in theaters.
Nice.
Like a couple dozen times. I loved it. I loved watching it because it was just, it was cool. Like something like, I don't know. I love Star Trek.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Ever since, it's something about the exploration of it, just the mystery of like where there you don't know what's gonna happen next.
Yeah.
So
cool. Yeah, man.
Yeah. So that's what I like about it. It captures the imagination.
Yeah, man. That's what's up.
Yeah, man. So how'd you get into Star Trek?
Funny enough, man, I didn't get into Trek until like later on in my life because when I was about 8 or 9 years old, there was another Star franchise that dragged me in, and it happened to be in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Hey,
I got into.
I'm still a fan of that as well.
I got into Wars like stupid crazy when I was 8. Like when I was growing up, it was, you know, Power Rangers, Ninja Turtles, Batman, and then Star Wars happened and changed my fucking life. It wasn't until I had graduated high school because it was funny too because I remember growing up, I would see Star Trek stuff everywhere. And I was always kind of like, it was always kind of a stigma for me because I was always like, well, that's what nerds like. You know what I mean? Like, that's.
I felt
like,
the I same see, way about Doctor Who.
Like, my thing was this. It's like, I would always look at, like, Wizard Magazine and I would always read comics. And I was such a shithead about it, too. I would see stuff and I'd be like, oh, man, you know, Spider-Man's cool and they're making all these cool superhero movies. And then I'd see Star Trek and I'm like, fucking nerds, man. Holy shit. And it wasn't until I got older. And by the way, I apologize for that. But it wasn't until I got older. And I really, like, I don't know. I got into this phase of my life where I was like, man, you know, like, I just love studying about the galaxy and, like, what we might discover one day and whatnot. And I remember the first J.J. movie had come out, and I went to go see it, and I thought it was pretty good. And then, like, I don't know. It just kind of, like, it was the bug that bit me. And then I was like, you know what? Like, it wasn't that I became a fan with J.J. It was that I was like... Maybe I deserve to go. Maybe it's, you know, deserving of a watch. Maybe let me go back and watch TOS and then Next Gen. Because I always had a cousin that was, like, up my ass about it. Like, dude, you gotta watch Star Trek. You gotta watch Star Trek. And I'm like, dude, it's the Wars, you know?
Yeah.
And exactly. So it wasn't until I got, you know, my Netflix account and I was watching, you know, TOS and then, like, Next Gen. And I was like, holy shit. Like, what the fuck have I been doing with my life? Because it was cool because it was like, here's a sci-fi franchise that doesn't demonize the future, because there's so many sci-fi franchises that demonize the future and say
yeah, it's,
that
we're, it's all post-apocalyptic.
It's post-apocalyptic. It's always just negative. It's always something where, you know, we're going to destroy ourselves by some means. Whereas Star Trek is like, no, not only are we not going to destroy ourselves, we're going to band together. We're going to become one people, and we're going to explore the universe as one people, as this diverse cast of people who are just as imaginative and bright and creative as you and I. And we're going to expand our horizons, and we're going to actually go and see the universe, and we're going to accomplish great things, and we're going to do great things. And it's this hopeful thing about Star Trek that I just loved, and I clasped onto, and I was like, yes, we need that kind of positivity in our fucking lives, man.
So you're looking forward to board the NCC 1701.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, I'd even board the, you know, NX-01 if I had to.
Oh, yeah.
Like, holy crap, I mean, it's cramped quarters, who cares? It's, you know, if I could, like, it's part of the reason why, you know how SpaceX is doing this exploration to Mars right now kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like, Star Trek is part of the reason why I want to do that. Now, Doctor Who kind of made me go, like, you know, maybe we should stay away from Mars, but, no, I'd still, like, you know, just that fascination of exploring and discovering a new planet, or, you know, helping to govern a planet or do something, like establish a settlement. You know, it's just it's there, man. And Star Trek definitely helped fuel that.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're gonna go ahead and we're gonna kind of take a break off the ship here, you know, for a commercial break, because you know we gotta pay for our crap too, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be right back.
Happy Christmas, by the way.
Today's episode of Boldly Going Nowhere is brought to you by CastWaveStudios.com/Amazon. Save 15% or more on millions of items through CastWave Studios' Amazon portal. That's CastWaveStudios.com/Amazon.
And we're back. That didn't take long.
This isn't Boldly Going Nowhere.
Hey. Well, we need commercial.
You need to record a new commercial, sir.
Yeah. Well,
doing a little inside baseball here, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, yeah, go check out Boldly Going Nowhere if you have a chance.
Yeah, it's our longest-running show.
My main message was Amazon there. So yeah, this show is brought to you by Amazon. Anytime, you know, you got your holiday shopping, you get the two-day free shipping with Amazon Prime. So join Amazon Prime and, you know, click through our link.
Fascinating, Captain.
Yep. Fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. So next, we review The Cage.
Okay, let's do a little bit of backstory about The Cage real fast, okay? Now, this was the very first pilot that was created by Gene Roddenberry for NBC back in 1965. It was originally aired in February 1965. However, the pilot is registered as 1964. It was created in 1964. And it stars... Let's see here. Pardon me. I'm having a bit of backup here. Okay, primary cast. So it stars Jeffrey Hunter as Captain Christopher Pike, Susan Oliver as Vina, Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock, Majel Barrett as Number One, who would later go on to be the voice of the computer for every subsequent Star Trek episode, John Hoyt as Dr. Philip Boyce, Perdita Durea as Lieutenant Jose Tyler, and Laurel Goodwin as Yeoman J.M. Colt. Now, it says here that NBC initially thought that this was a slow-running episode that just went nowhere. And it just, you know, the action was too slow, and they criticized the idea of having a female first, first officer, which is why we got Lieutenant Spock later on. Which sucks, really, because, you know, like, they were really trying to push the boundaries here and try and do something where it's like, hey, look, women can be in power. Go figure, right? So, that's just a little bit of backstory. This was the first pilot, and then there was a second pilot that was made.
I found a clip.
What's that?
I found a clip of Gene Roddenberry introducing Star Trek, the original pilot.
Yeah, I think this was in 1988. They actually re-released it in color. And this would eventually go on... Let me see here. This would originally be footage that would be added to The Menagerie, which is a season one episode.
Okay. So let's play this and see how this rolls. An introduction by Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek. All copyrights acknowledged.
You were the ones who said it first. Star Trek lives, and live it does. For over two decades, it has.
Way more now.
Yeah, two decades. Well, it's been 20 years.
But now I want to take you back to a time when the Enterprise and Spock and Kirk and all the rest were just part of an idea I had. Back to the beginnings of Star Trek. To the first Star Trek pilot. A pilot being a film that is meant to demonstrate to a network what a new series will look like each week.
You mean like sweets?
This 60 Minutes is today considered something of a television document. And some regard it as perhaps as exciting as any Star Trek that's since been filmed. When the network saw what you soon will see, they rejected it. From that day until now, the first pilot has never been seen in its original form. This Star Trek pilot story is called The Cage.
There we go.
Yeah.
And with that, with Gene Roddenberry introducing all that, let's get into the review. All right. Now,
Where do we begin with this episode?
I managed to structure our particular review. I managed to kind of organize it between a few different categories, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. And we will reveal them as we go on.
Yeah, we'll reveal them as we go on. First, we're going to go into what's called engineering, and then that would be basically what's the
I'm going to need a cheat sheet next episode, by the way. Just so I can like look at this and be like, "Oh, yeah, it's quite. Yeah, that's exactly what we need to talk about." Welcome to the pilot, everybody.
Welcome to the pilot. Yeah, really. It's going to be as crappy as the case.
Don't worry. We're going to hit our stride in like four episodes.
Oh, yeah. We'll get everything.
We'll get there. It's not a One Drink Geek episode.
The special effects, basically. Kind of like judging like what kind of special effects they had on hand, mm-hmm. and things like that.
What do they have on hand? Yeah, okay.
What you thought.
So first and foremost, paper! Holy crap! apparently, automated screens were not a thing yet.
He did have Kinect powers.
That is true.
There was at one point Spock was in front of a screen and he waved his hand to the side, like his pointer figure to the side.
Like he's playing like Kinect Sports or something.
It turned the page.
So,
I mean, during its time, it must have looked like, oh my gosh, he's moving his hand, he's changing the screen.
What is this demonry?
what is this wizardry?
Special effects. Obviously, and. We're obviously going to try and be a little lighter on this because, obviously, again, it's the pilot, and, I mean, for God's sakes, the irony of being harsh on a pilot is...
During our pilot.
Is on the nose, if anything. But, we have the first iterations of, the communicators, which are... Actually, they kind of remind me of the Star Trek Wrath of Khan communicators, only, a very... Because they're, more square and whatnot. There's so much that's, rudimentarily just, obviously, this was not the final result that they would go with. The phasers just looked like something out of a Flash Gordon novel from the 1920s or something.
And specifically, I noticed they had a straight single beam, like a real laser.
Because that's the thing. When you shoot a laser beam off, it doesn't just fraction off and it's like, oh, we're sending this energy from one point to another. That's not how lasers work. It's a continuous beam. So if it's going to be a powered photon laser beam like that, then they actually got this right initially, and then they changed it, which is kind of interesting. The special effects... Okay, these... oh, God, what are the name of these freaking aliens? I forget.
I don't know. We're gonna call them buttheads or sackheads.
Sackheads.
They look really...
I believe they're Talosians.
All right, we're moving on to aliens.
Yeah, they're Talosians. Not bad. Not bad designs. They definitely looked more like the Mars Attacks Martians than anything.
They really do.
They actually had throbbing veins in their heads.
But think about it. This was before most kind of alien.
Like not a lot of people did that kind of crap back in the day with special effects. It looks an awful lot like a Star Trek episode in that, hey, look, there's a stationary background that's been painted to look like, oh, there's so much more going on, way far away over there. And, they actually do, it's funny because they do so much in this episode and yet they do so little. They go to so many different places. For instance, they're on the ship and then they're on this, planet that looks like it's from Fallout 4. And then they look like, and then they're in this cage area, which looks like a freaking zoo. And then they're, on this, Greco-warrior-Roman arena kind of thing where, Pike is fighting some kind of, warrior god or whatever. And then, oh, hey, look, there's a picnic with a horse.
They do
a lot of different shit here. And I'm like, wow, they actually kind of, took their time with it.
Yeah.
Go figure. Because... How many Star Trek episodes do you know where they have that many set pieces that change? Especially TOS.
And the first woman acting captain.
And the last, I believe.
And the last until Voyager.
Yeah.
Until Voyager, the permanent captain.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there must have been, acting captains throughout the series. We'll find out about those later, obviously.
Well, yeah.
But in terms of engineering, what did you think of it in terms of what... If you had to give it a grade out of 10... in terms of the special effects.
Considering the budget that they had, I'm gonna factor in this, okay? Considering the budget that they had, and that this was 1964, and considering how they didn't have really anything else to reference this off of, because it's one thing to be like, you know, let's kind of try and change things from the way that it used to be with like Next Generation. Here, they're literally building a universe from the ground up. So, and again, also what's interesting is the Enterprise, the bridge of the Enterprise, looks the same. The Enterprise looks the same. You know, it's the same thing. They literally just changed it up a little bit.
Exactly.
And so as far as creating that classic design goes, and as far as doing what they did with the budget that they had and the people that they did at the time that they did it, I'd give it a freaking 9 out of 10, dude.
Yeah.
They knocked it out of the park. As far as set design goes,
I was more 8 out of 10, but I'll go with you. I'll give it an extra
it's
point.
You know, they went for it and they stuck with it, man. Yeah.
You know, the only minus 1 point because some of it's kind of laughable.
I mean, okay, there's a giant walking chicken.
Oh, yeah.
For like 2 seconds on the
The minus points also the gorilla in the guy in the gorilla suit with
they went nowhere with that. They went nowhere with that.
That's a really what the hell moment. Like, what the fuck?
It almost looked like the Sasquatch from that like MS-DOS game where like you're just gaining down the freaking mountain or whatever. Like,
what the fuck is going
on? Is that a Sasquatch? I believe that's a Sasquatch mouse.
No Sasquatch mouse. Oh, over God, there.
We got to get the Sasquatch out of here.
God. Oh my God.
Pay no attention to the Sasquatch
right,
on your
next,
left.
Next we'll move on to, mm-hmm. you know, to the I think though upon the most important topics on like at least on this and how I view it, we call this the bridge, and mm-hmm. then that's acting.
Yes,
how was the performance in these Star Trek movies? Were they make them believable? And I will say, well, if I get a chance to talk a little bit more, that they're pretty good in this, and they're quite convincing.
Yeah,
most of them are pretty into it. Some of them, it's kind of like you're really reciting dialogue, aren't you?
You know what? Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, the Talosians, they're obviously meant to be a little more disconnected.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unfair to try and judge the acting on that. As far as the acting goes, for me, I think everybody did a pretty good job, except for, like, the woman that's trying to seduce Pike. I mean, she just seemed like she was just...
She had a dirt
gnawing
face.
On that fucking scenery with her fucking...
She's just like... She's like a... You're a specimen.
You're perfect.
You're perfect.
Oh, doll, don't you know you're perfect?
And she... I don't know what, like, she was leading him to that door, up the hill to that door, and she had, like, this face.
Oh, dude,
face.
Wait, we forgot to mention the fart gun in the last
segment.
Yeah,
and then we're going to mention that. Is that as soon as she leads it up, she's just like, yeah, perfect. And she didn't move her lips at all. She was just like, with her teeth, yeah, perfect.
She pulled an Alan Rickman, hello, hi, Potter. You know, like,
of course, visual reference and audio podcast.
So, like, she just literally didn't even, like, you know how, like, they say to do the perfect Alan Rickman impersonation?
Yeah, she does that.
You make sure that your lips never touch, you know.
She
literally did never that.
Touch. And then, so, he walks up the hill, they come out, and they hit him with, I said it was mustard. Brian, you laughed, and then you're like, well, hold on a sec, we rewind it back, and then you said...
Old Bay.
Old Bay. I'm just like, no, not Old Bay.
No.
Then we both agreed it was a fart gun.
Yeah.
It's like, and just falls to the floor.
Oh, God.
So that was pretty funny.
I'm nauseous.
The aliens were, you know, pretty decent for being for aliens.
I mean, they were kind of ho-hum aliens.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, you would eventually get the Klingons. You would eventually get, you know... The Vulcans, you would eventually get, you know, the Romulans and the Remans. Well, the Remans came way fucking later, but you would eventually get, like, so many different interesting, you know...
And all the telepathic...
Interesting villains and different species. And it's just, like, these guys are just kind of, like... They literally look like they belong in a fucking Flash Gordon movie.
And all the telepathic
they do.
Scenes...
Like,
really, they didn't really have to do much. They have to sit there and just make expressions. Mm-hmm. So, like... I really am taking away points for that, because all they sat there and just went and just smirked.
Like, I don't know, man. They just they reek of like a 1950s B movie villain. like they came from Uranus or
they
something.
They came
like,
from the outside.
Like they just, they're so bad. Like they're so noticeably bad that they take away from the overall episode. Because if this had been like, I don't know, God, if this had been any other alien species or something, that'd be fine. But they just.
They just didn't do anything
not a fan.
Justice. But in terms of I'm gonna give this the acting here. It's not really a strong suit. I'm gonna give it I'm gonna give it like a 15 out of 30. That's out of 30 points.
It's out of 30 points for acting.
That's the only one that I gave a boost. Everything else 10.
Why 30?
Because I couldn't come up with other two other categories.
All right, fine. I'll give. God damn it! I'll give it like a 12.
Okay.
Out of 30. I don't know. That's a weird one for me. Hold on. Let me regauge that.
Out of 30.
Out of 30
points.
Oh, God. That's a weird percentile. I'll give it like a... I'll be nice and give it a 13.
I'm giving it a 15. Because like, I think they did half their job.
Yeah.
At least half their job.
Well, no. It was that the other acting was so bad that it like bled into the good acting for me.
So we're going with 15 out of 30. So, bringing our two scores together.
What happened to the ambience?
And then, I cut down the ambience because we're getting into the... I have a sound effect for this one. We're getting into the next section, and that would be sick bay. And it's not... Oh, what's going on here? Oh, there it is.
Welcome to the pilot, everybody.
Welcome to the pilot, everybody. Nothing, everything goes wrong during the pilot. We should all know this.
Oh, come on. You've been on so many first episodes.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Okay, now we're going moving on to sick bay, which means the death count. And who died? Who died in this? Red shirt, and there's no red shirts, so
no one
died in this.
No one died in this episode.
Oh, if you count that guy, but I think he was a hologram, so there it doesn't really count as a death.
Yeah,
and
no, that
happened before they
that
said.
That was a hologram, so no, that was. Yeah, there was like one dude.
So actual death.
Like one dude, but it doesn't even really count. And like the thing is too, because like the idea is that he's on this cliff, and Pike's trying to defend himself, and he pulls out this freaking like giant fancy sword or whatever, and it's about like I don't know 3 feet long or whatever, and he holds it up as a like spike. Pike holds up a spike to like protect himself, and this guy jumps on it.
And he was like, "Sight!"
No. And like,
sorry.
After that, he's like, "I'm gonna go fly a kite.
Kite.
I'm gonna get height." but no, he's like, he's holding this spike, and this guy jumps on it, and. So it's supposed to be like he's literally like sliding down the pole. I know phrasing, I know, but sliding down that pole. But no, he's sliding down this pole and like there's nothing sticking out of his back. There's no blade sticking out of his back, and like he's about like I don't know 1 foot like from stomach front to stomach back. This thing is like 3 feet long. It should be sticking out of his damn back.
I know he died. He's died, and he's not a red shirt. But I've been saving this sound effect for anyone who's red shirt who dies. But since this is the only death in the actual episode, I have no choice.
All right.
No choice. You're welcome.
Are we going to do that for every death?
At every red shirt death, we're going to do that for.
Oh, my God. That's going to get obnoxious.
That's going to get really obnoxious.
That's going to get stupid obnoxious.
I'm going to shorten it to just Welshie.
I pray for the listeners' ears when we get to the Dominion War.
All right,
holy
so,
shit, man.
So, sick bay, I'm just going to give it one because there's only one.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's like we can't rate the death or anything. It's like we got to have to do...
It's the
like,
death count,
what's the death count? Yeah.
One.
One.
One out of possible 10, it's a good episode. A lot of people died, it's a good episode. All right.
You and I have very different definitions of good on that.
I was thinking up of categories, okay?
Holy shit. Can
this
you
is the pilot
can,
episode.
Can you imagine if we did that for, like, Man of Steel? Holy shit.
And it
well,
seems
she,
like
well,
it's,
well, she.
It's 250,000 over 10.
Holy shit, man.
Anyway.
Then if that was the case, then you would think that Man of Steel was the best fucking movie ever.
This is for science fiction, not comic book movies.
Sorry, I've had a lot of experience with the latter.
You have. That's why we're doing this one.
I had about 50 episodes worth, okay?
Okay, so next is kind of rating them on where did they travel. Did they travel anywhere? And as we found out, they do.
Yeah.
They travel to, you know.
I guess Talos is the name.
And, like, how many, I mean, really, how many times do they use a transporter? I think it's, like, twice.
They used, okay, they used the transporter to get there.
Okay.
And then they came back, mm-hmm. and then they went back again with the laser, came back on board. Spock and crew tried to go down there, but then it was the women that were sent down, and then they came back again. So that's about 7 times that the transporter was used.
Okay, so I you would say they traveled a little bit.
Yeah.
So that I'm gonna give that a 7 out of 10.
But it was just back and forth. So it was literally like you and me going back and forth from the hotel room to you know the arcade at Magfest or something.
Do you want to just give them like a 6?
Sure.
Like just give them, we're not we'll give them like a one more point for trying, but
okay,
but it really
yes let's quite
now
let's,
all right now let's talk about the captain. The captain,
yes, Captain Pike.
This Captain Pike didn't even want to do his job,
pretty much
was tired of his job before the series began.
Yes, I mean it's established basically pretty early on. And I think that this is one of the points where, you know, NBC must have been like, well, then, wait a minute. What the hell are you saying that you're wanting to do with this episode or this series even? Because you have this universe that hasn't even been established yet. And you have a captain who's apparently already so war ragged that he's just like, damn it, I just want to go home. And I want to, you know, like, I want a picnic and I want to... You know, I
want to... I want my juice. I want my nap.
I want my nap. Yeah, pretty much. And, like, he's just like, damn it, I'm tired. And, like, it's like, dude, like, talk about alienating an audience from your captain, your fucking lead, like, 5 minutes into the episode. When you have a captain who's just like, I don't even want to fucking be here anymore. I'm just... He's like, at this point, he's just like, I'm literally collecting a paycheck.
I'm just
like, dude,
sit
you're
here.
In space.
I just don't like being here. This is not something I want to do.
To be fair, you know, his reasoning is that he's tired of delegating over 203 members of the crew on board. Which, by the way, that ship holds so many fucking more people on that ship. But,
I mean, the whole
but,
time.
But then he's also like, well, I'm tired of sending people down to their deaths and
the whole time,
delegating that.
It reminds me of our mutual friend. Like that's the captain right there. I mean, he just doesn't want to do anything. He just constantly wants to sit down and just whatever. And, like, you're laughing because you know who it is. But just like what the fuck, man. Yeah. So out of 10, what would you give the captain? I mean,
well, see, that's the interesting thing because Captain Pike. If this was the last time that we saw Captain Pike, I'd give him a 3 because. I don't know. I just don't like the guy. I mean, he's supposed to be charming. He's supposed to be, you know, witty. But he just comes off as kind of this, like, boorish, like, brutish guy who seems better suited for a detective noir kind of movie from the 1940s or something. Like, he seems like that kind of actor. He comes from that era of, like, you know, Cary Grant, Humphrey Bogart kind
he needs
of actor.
The dude needs a suit and a fedora.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Whereas we would get Kirk, who is so much better fitted because, you know, he just seems to have that kind of...
He gives a shit.
He gives a shit, and also, like, Kirk just seems more, like, of that mindset to be in that position. Like, maybe that's just the generation in him. Like, maybe it's just because he's that young and he's of that kind of, you know, mentality where, like, hey, man, the future, and, like, let's think about it and shit. Right. Whereas back in the day, they were just like, you know, like, hey, dollface, you know, whatever. but we would eventually get... Captain Pike in The Menagerie, Part 1 and 2, where he's been all disfigured, and we find out, like, holy crap, like, he's been through some shit. But then we would also get him later on in, you know, Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness. And I think that they actually kind of pulled that character out from obscurity and really made him into something awesome. So overall, as a character, not just counting in this episode... Captain Pike is actually kind of an intriguing character because he's literally like the bridge for
but
Kirk.
Just from this episode alone.
No.
Because this is basically...
On this episode alone,
When we're doing this section called Captain's Quarters, it's about the captain.
Yeah.
In this particular episode. And I'm going to say I'm gonna give him a 4 out of 10 because at least he solved a little bit of problems.
He solved a bit of a problem. Well, no, you know what? I wouldn't even say he solved a problem as much as he got out of a situation.
So 3 out of 10. Then.
He didn't solve a problem. He really didn't. Sat there and like it wasn't until these Talosians were just like, "Holy shit, you guys, you humans are fucked in the head."
Right.
Well, they were just like, "You know what? We don't need your kind of trash on this planet. Please get out of here." And he's like, "Well, that solves another case.
We're gonna agree.
So, yeah,
give him a 3.
He did nothing.
Three out of ten.
He did nothing but bitch and moan about wanting to go home and fucking talk to a horse.
He's got a 30% F. All right. All right, next...
Come see me after class, Pike.
The action... Battle stations. The action scenes. Yeah, I'm missing that. I'll find it. But what do you think of the action? I think it's pretty, for what it was okay.
Personally, I think it was very slow moving.
The action in the... sequence.
There was nothing going on half the time. It was
a lot of standing around, wasn't it?
Standing around, talking, and then like, you know, how do I put it? I just, you know, whenever there was like a laser beam or whatever, it took forever. Whenever they would transport down, like, I'm glad that Roddenberry was just like, you know, we need to cut that whole transporter sequence down to about, you know, 10 seconds at the very most, because it took like, I counted, it took about like 40 seconds for them to go from, you know, starship to in transmission to planet, and then, oh, we're fully formed. It's... Thank you.
There you go. That's your battle station.
Yay. Yeah.
I'll save that to the playlist.
You need to get the boatswain whistle.
We have that.
Yay. Captain on board. There was... Because that's the thing, too, because all of the characteristic action that you would eventually see in Star Trek, none of it's here. There's no fight sequences. There's no Kirk and his shirt ripped open time and time again. Just being like, damn it. damn it, Spock. How do I beat him?
I'm going to give this...
A 1.
You see, really? That
I'm giving it a 1 for action because I was literally laying on the couch falling asleep as I was watching this.
You were. I went to go do something else because I watched it before. Because we both watched this episode before. We were like, let's watch it again together. We're like, we're all excited. I'm like, oh yeah, Star Trek. And it's just we're like,
it, dude, this episode is less than an hour. It felt like a fucking 2-hour movie.
All right, we're gonna pretty much make this the next two categories. We're gonna make this kind of the same category, kind of. It's usually aliens and then hostiles, but in this case, we'll be doing
this a lot. Aliens are the hostiles.
Aliens are the hostiles. So we're basically going to we're combine this into a category, alien hostiles, and it's going to be out of 20. Because what is the villain without... What is a series without its villain? Yeah. Without the aliens? What's Star Trek without aliens?
You see, Sean, if you don't have good, if you don't have evil, then... there's nothingness. You need to have evil before you can have good in the world. So one cannot exist without the other.
I don't know what impersonation you're doing, but it's something.
I was going for Denny Crane. Denny Crane. Shatner. Instead of, not Kirk necessarily.
But so we're gonna go over the Ballsack aliens, obviously. Mm-hmm. They're the villains of the of this particular
the Ballsack aliens.
Now, the wind chime sound going back and forth through the window.
They have a lovely sound.
I tried to find that online on YouTube. I couldn't find it. But basically, it was just
You know exactly what to play.
I don't have that. You got it. I don't. But
the Back to the Future chime.
Oh yeah, yeah. But yeah, but that's the Back to the we were joking like the Back to the Future time. But anyway, this is a pilot. We don't have everything.
I'd go back in time, put some money on the cubbies. We're gonna reference other shit that we like too on the show.
But
so.
they were just kind of blah. I thought
they were. Yeah, they were.
I mean, and as villains. I mean, they were sort of mischievous. They trapped you in a cage and said, you know, do our bidding. We're experimenting with you. It's like, I mean, but it's
well, no. Here's my thing too. Is like these beings are supposed to be so much more superior than us because they
got big heads.
Well, no. And well, yes, but also because apparently their mental facilities are way more advanced than ours. Because
they got veins throbbing and paper mache.
Literally, your first introduction to these things, aside from them capturing Pike and putting him, you know, down in a hole, you know, not to reference an Alice in Chains song or anything, but basically, their first feeling so cold. The first thing that you see them do, or the first time that you hear them speak, it's literally them going like, "Look, he's getting aggressive, and then he's going to try and do a show of power." And they're like, "I'm like, fuck you guys." Like,
and may have mentioned a cartoon that straight up just copies and pastes like these aliens, but just gives them tentacles, Futurama, and it's the same aliens.
Mm-hmm.
That you know,
oh, with shit. The gravity what, shift. Which alien?
It was there were like three of them, and I was it was when they had the like Nibbler was you know was pooping those little back black gravity balls.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Oh, those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, see, I was gonna go with like you know like Kang and Kodos from like The Simpsons, maybe.
Basically.
Kind of, sorta, yeah.
I don't know if this is the thing that started all the aliens, or is this just another copycat?
Probably.
Yeah.
You humans, you don't understand complex emotions and love, you know.
So out of 10, what do we rate this hostile aliens?
Let me put it this way: aside from stock footage used in the menagerie, you never see these things again ever in Star Trek. You never see these guys again. You had, dude, they reused the Ferengi later on. And as bad as an alien species that is,
I hate that. I mean,
as bad as the Ferengi are, they actually reuse them. They never reused the Talosians ever again. So as far as that goes, I'm giving them a zero. They made no impression on me other than I hate these fucking things.
And then
they're annoying.
Then them as villains, I'm thinking. Oh, I'm gonna agree with you about the aliens. They're zero, but them as villains. Yeah, they even try anything?
Two, because they weren't even really all that hostile. They were just trying to get information and trying. They were the misunderstood villains who were trying to rebuild a society.
So, like, am I my?
And their means were hostile, maybe, sure, but whatever. I don't care.
All right, let's go over like what do we think about like just wrap up what do we think about this particular episode and like how.
What did I think of this particular episode?
Yeah, in terms of like,
if I had to give a review like a one paragraph blurb that I could put on Netflix or something like that, maybe an Amazon review. Here's what my review would be: The Cage, while having a lot of the elements that would make Star Trek ultimately go on to be one of the most successful franchises in science fiction history, ultimately suffers from a plot that just moves at a snail's pace. Has undercooked characters and has so little to do with anything that would later come on to be Star Trek that honestly, aside from historical, you know, curiosity and wanting to see just where this idea, you know, was germinated from, this is a skip. You don't have to watch this at all. As a matter of fact, they even went so far as to say, hey, you know what? We know how boring this is. Let's make it into a better episode later
on. Even Gene Roddenberry, as we noted earlier, said that this episode was going to be bad.
Yeah.
It was going to be really
He
really
straight
bad.
Up just like, you know, like, it's not my best work.
Like, don't even bother. Like, this is a waste of your time. But hey, no one's seen this before. I guess I'll show you it.
It's literally like me with, like, my first episode, because it's still on, like, it's still on YouTube. It's like my first episode of Wonder Geek. It's just like, I know it's bad.
I know what you're thinking. but you need to stick with me on this.
By the way, we need to do an episode one day where like I think they might sell it. Like we need to get some Romulan ale or something.
That'd be fun.
Of a Wonder on Geek episode. That'd be fun.
So, all right.
What did you think?
We're getting to the kind of the end here. And I think that I'm adding up all of our points. And adding up everything that we discussed, 37 out of 100. 37% F.
Yes.
This has got 37%.
This was a failure of an episode.
This was a failure of an episode.
However, it would go on to create, again, one of the more successful franchises in television history. So in a weird sort of way, despite all of its failures, it's still kind of a beautiful thing.
It is. I mean, and a lot of it is really quite hysterical. I mean, I would give it a watch, but you know, but don't tie yourself too much to it.
It's funny because it's as much of a watch as, say, the Star Trek the Motion Picture is. In that,
where this music is coming from.
Absolutely. Ilya's theme, by the way. Beautiful. By the way, that opening scene with the starfield and this music in that movie brought me to tears. It was amazing. I was like, it's like I'm literally like looking out the side of the Enterprise, because like my room was dark and I was like, oh, this is fucking amazing. But I don't know. As far as this episode goes, again, this was where the tree was planted that would eventually become a giant fucking oak. And yeah, it's check it out if you really want to. That's about all I have to say about it.
Yeah, and all right. So wrapping this show up, we'll start with plugs. Brian, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube. Again, I've mentioned it twice already. So I do a beer review show called One Drunk Geek with you, Sean.
We do a beer review. Yes, we do. Show called One Drunk Geek.
And we're actually going to try and do a holiday episode before.
Check
I
it
leave.
On YouTube.com/ Castaway Studios. And that was on the Y.
Hey, you got your South Park in my Star Trek.
it's like cookies and chocolate.
But we're actually going to try and do a holiday beer review. So that should be fun. But then you can check me out on Vine. Orange Hatman is my handle. And then you can also check me out on Twitter at twitter.com/bmassey1987.
Okay.
How about you, Sean?
Okay. You can check me out at Sean L. Holmes on Twitter. That's SeanLholmes. And you can also, check out Boldly Going Nowhere on castwavestudios.com. That'd be me, Colin, Jordan, Rocky.
And me now.
And Brian, he's joining in on our episodes now.
No.
Get out of work.
I have an announcement for that, by the way.
You do, huh?
I got my schedule changed for Thursdays. I'm officially back on the show now.
Oh, dude.
I'm officially back, baby.
Sweet. So, I'm your captain, Sean Holmes.
And I'm your first officer, Brian Massey.
And you have been listening to The Prime Directive, where we'll be going over every Star Trek episode. First one down.
Many, many more to go.
Many more.
This is going to be awesome.